This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
On Keeping the Faith this evening, we're talking with Leslie Leyland Fields about spiritual life in Alaska. She's a writer there, a very popular blogger, author of several books. Leslie, can you hear me all right?
I can hear you just great.
And it's 5 o'clock here in Illinois and Indiana. What time is it in Alaska? I know there's so many time zones that Alaska is so spread out.
Yeah, well, you know, so it's 2 o'clock here. I'm 3 hours behind you, but I think you are remembering when I first came here 35 years ago, there were literally 5 time zones in Alaska.
Is that no longer true?
That's no longer true. We're all on Alaska Standard Time. Yay! So it's great when you've got to contact your, your state capital, and they're not 3 time zones away.
Wow!
Yeah.
What a difference! Now you're on Kodiak Island. Tell me and our listeners, where that is in Alaska.
Yeah, that is, it's a big island in the Gulf of Alaska. So the way I describe it so people can visualize it is if you think of, you know, Alaska, it kind of looks like the profile of an old man, kind of with a beard. You know, the Aleutian Islands look like the beard.
Uh-oh, and you're describing me.
Oh. Okay, well, under Steve's chin is Kodiak Island. Kind of under the chin, or just kind of at the start of the beard, is where Kodiak Island is, and it kind of sits kind of canted a little bit sideways. And I'll bet you didn't know, Steve, that it is actually the second largest island in the United States.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've been to Alaska only once, and only to a very small part of it. Took a cruise up along the part that I was surprised to find out is a rainforest.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Southeast Alaska, and actually Kodiak has a lot of rainforest qualities as well. So we have dense spruce forest. And we have the Japanese current, which comes over and is a warming, you know, is very much of a warming influence. So right now, for instance, you know, I wish it were snowing, but it's not. It's just howling rain. So it's about 38 degrees. And so it really moderates the temperature. So we don't, I mean, it can go below zero and we'll get cold snaps, you know, that are very cold. But it stays, it's a very, very moderate, very rainy climate. So if you walk into the spruce forest, what you'll see is, especially the forests that are right on the edge of the ocean, you'll see massive moss, green moss, just growing on everything. And it's beautiful, kind of. It's sort of ethereal looking. It's very Lord of the Rings-ish.
Now, you described your weather today as 38 degrees and howling rain. Does that mean there's a lot of wind today?
Yes.
Is that typical?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It is typical. We get lots of wind. In fact, I was thinking we had 4 nice days. The sun was shining, and that's a lot of sun. That's 4 days in a row. Like, I woke up this morning, and, you know, it was storming and blowing, and it's like, okay, back to normal. It's sort of a relief, kind of. We're very accustomed to rain and big seas. I'm looking out my window. I sit over the ocean, and I see big, huge crashing waves.
Now, yours is one of the few blogs that I subscribe to, so I get notices about the new postings on my email. And in a recent one, there was a reference to the sun in Alaska, and you told a story there about your son Isaac when he was 2.5, I think. Retell that, if you don't mind.
Okay, yeah. It was sometime probably in the spring, and he was 2.5 at the time, and we'd just driven out to the airport to drop my husband off or pick him up or something. We get out of the car, and I'm holding him on my hip, and he's just fussing and shielding his eyes and pointing. He's pointing up to the sky. And finally I say, Isaac, what is it? And he shields his eyes and he goes, what is that? That yellow thing in the sky. I said, Isaac, that's the sun. It's okay. It won't hurt you.
Alaska, growing up in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean to give away too much here that you don't care to, but how many years ago was that?
My first trip here was in 76, and then I was married in 77. So then I moved here for in 77. So that's 35 years.
And where did you grow up before moving to Alaska? Where did you spend time?
Yeah, I grew up in New Hampshire.
Wow, what a change. Where did you go to school?
I went to college in Cedarville, Ohio, a little college in southwest Ohio, and that's where I met my husband, who grew up on Kodiak Island. So we kind of, it's not quite meeting in the middle, but sort of.
Uh-huh. And how big is Kodiak Island? How many people live there? I'm sure you've said that on your blog, but I just don't remember.
About 15,000. And it's basically, there's just one town. There's the town of Kodiak. And there's not a bridge to get here. You have to fly or take a ferry. The ferry is 12 hours.
From where? 12 hours from where?
From the Alaska Peninsula. So what you do is from Anchorage, it's about a five-hour drive down to the end of Alaska Peninsula, and then it's 12 hours from there on the ferry. So we are just one community. There are about five very small native villages around the edge, where those villages range from 50 to 200 people, and then there's the town of Kodiak. So that's it. And we don't have roads around the island. It's a federal bear refuge. So all of the island, except for the villages and the town of Kodiak, is wilderness.
A federal bear refuge, and is that the famous or infamous Kodiak bear?
It is. It is.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Let me tell listeners how they can read your blog. It's can be found at her Leslie's website, which is very easy to remember, Leslie Leyland Fields, and Leslie is spelled with an I-E, and Leyland, L-E-Y-L-A-N-D, Fields, F-I-E-L-D-S. In Illinois, we know about the Fields. Was your husband from the same family as Marshall Fields?
I don't believe so. And I'd like to say that I'm related to Mrs. Fields.
Of cookie fame,
empire.
Yes. All right. Well, Leslie, LeylandFields.com will get you to the website where Leslie writes about many interesting topics about nature, about ecology, about spirituality. She is the author of a book we talked about on this show once. What was that? 3 years ago, I think. Maybe didn't that come out in 2010?
It did. It did. Yeah, that came out in 2010.
It reminded me of the title.
Yeah, that was The Spirit of Food, and then the subtitle was 34 Writers on Feasting and Fasting Toward God.
The Spirit of Food, and I think we had both you and one of the other writers in that collection.
Yeah, that was Jeannie Murray Walker.
Right, from the University of Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So listeners who would like to look that up may go to the WILL website and look under the Archives of Keeping the Faith. Now, our website has been redone. It's new and quite fancy, and you may have to, if you've used it before, to check out archive programs. There's a slightly different way to do it, but you'll follow the prompts and be able to find that. Just go to will.illinois.edu and look for Keeping the Faith, and or just put Keeping the Faith in the search box, and it'll pop up, and you'll be able to find other programs. You can put in Leslie's name then to find her particular program from 2010 about the Spirit of Food, a fascinating book. But we're talking about her blog mainly today and about what it's like to be a writer about spirituality on an island off the coast of Alaska. So if you'd like to ask her a question or make a comment, or perhaps you've traveled in Alaska yourself, do give us a call. This is a live program. We're broadcasting here on the 3rd of March in 2013. And you may call us anywhere the program is heard, including on the Internet, by using a toll-free 800 number. So 800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL, the call letters of the station. If you're in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois area, and you're in the 217 area code, there are a couple other local lines you may use. Punch in 333-9455. We're always eager to have listeners join this conversation here on Keeping the Faith. Leslie, I particularly was intrigued by one of your recent blogs that I ask you to sort of be prepared to read at least part of, and maybe even all of it, just to give listeners a chance to actually hear your writer's voice. And the one I had asked you to look at, I hope you remember, is "They Also Serve Who Drink Whiskey and Weep."
Mm-hmm. Okay, I will do that. I think it'd be okay to read all of it because it's, I try to keep my blogs, my posts fairly short. I think it's maybe 600 or 700 words.
I think it'd be fine.
Okay. Okay.
We will settle in on our Sunday evening here and listen.
"They Also Serve Who Drink Whiskey and Weep." Coming home. I write this the day after returning from 2 weeks of travel, home to Kodiak Island, to my husband and sons and daughter and Yorkshire Terrier. I walk through my door and want everyone to kiss me as if I have just been born, as indeed I have. I have missed so much, the faces of my children, who have grown older since I left, the mountains, who think they guard us, the Gulf of Alaska, that lashes and washes our beaches and windows with salty hands every day. I am home, but I cannot stop thinking about her, the woman I met on the plane. It was the fourth and last plane of the trip. I was almost there. I edged down the aisle and saw her, crying, sobbing on her phone. My eyes went dark. My heart tightened. As I stepped past her, I heard her say, "They just told me I have pancreatic cancer. He gave me 3 to 6 months to live. I don't want to die." And she dissolved again into weeping, running her hands through her hair. She was beautiful, dark-skinned, dressed in expensive jeans, a leather jacket. Her phone was pink. She gripped it so hard, hanging on to whoever was at the other end. My seat was one row back and one row over. I could see her profile, hear every word. I looked around desperately. A woman was dying, and we were calmly sitting in our seats, buckling our seatbelts against death, and would soon follow all the safety requirements while she was no longer safe. What should I do? Men sat in front of her and in back, each one with the bland face we wear when we pretend we don't hear because we too are afraid. I wanted to do this too, but there was an empty seat beside her. She would be alone this entire flight with no one. And how could I forget what I had prayed that morning? In the hotel room, on my face, wanting this day, this one day, to have a pure heart, to serve someone. May your kingdom come, your will be done. May I hear you and serve you this day. And off I went into another day of terminals and planes, and there she is, near me, still crying, the seat beside her empty. Shaking, I unbuckle my seatbelt, lift my bag, and stand beside her. "Is it okay if I sit beside you?" I smile. She looks up at me, surprised, with her ruined face, and nods, trusting like a child, her eyes again filling with tears. I sit. She watches me settle. What has happened? I ask her, and it pours out. But there are hands now to catch what falls. Our shoulders touch. I stroke her arm, and we mourn and grieve and sit together in the shock of it. She is young. She knows Jesus, but she doesn't want to die. She cries again and again through a twisted mouth. I silently scream to Jesus to give me the words, and they come. At one point, she grasps my hands and says, God sent you to me. Mostly, I am there to cry with her, to drink Chardonnay with her. I know the Chardonnay will wreck me, but had she offered me whiskey, I would have drunk that too. It wasn't much. I write all this not for anyone to say, oh, what a great servant you are, because I am not. How many people have I not seen and walked past? How many have I seen and still walked past? But this is instead about this wondrous, terrifying God we serve, who has asked one of his daughters to die a hard, early death, and who asked another selfish, frightened daughter to sit with her in her fear and aloneness for a short time. It was so little. And she staggered off the plane to walk into the end of her life. And I staggered into a car taking me to stages and microphones. Here is what I remember. They also serve who only stand and wait, John Milton wrote in his sonnet on his blindness. I was going to speak on podiums in many places before many people for 2 weeks, but none of that mattered then. Of all I did on that trip, perhaps this mattered most. They also serve who only sit and weep. Can tears really be enough for that day, for that hour? Yes. God will provide another servant and another for every empty seat beside her. Dare we ask this each morning, may I hear you and serve you this day? Yes, dare. Then watch for the empty seat. Bring tissues, drink whiskey if you must, become a child, give whatever you've been given, and the kingdom of God will come near.
We've heard a reading by the author, Leslie Leland Fields, from her blog, which can be found at leslielelandfields.com. This is one of her most recent ones, and so you can find it easily by going to that website and looking for her blog entries. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host of these Keeping the Faith programs. We'll be talking with Leslie about some of the content in that reading she just gave in just a moment or two. But let me mention that coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead, next week we'll be replaying a program that was broadcast September 23rd last year in the fall with Professor Danny Otto, who's a professor of philosophy and religion at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston. He grew up in an Amish family that switched to Mennonite, but he keeps in touch with his Mennonite relatives and friends, and he talked with us very interestingly in that program about changes in Illinois Amish life. People think somehow the Amish are completely stuck in time past, but there have been some fairly radical changes in recent years, and that's an interesting program that we have had requests for and wanted to replay. So that'll be March 10, Changes in Illinois Amish Life. The following week will be a live program. Professor Don Nolan from Parkland College Emeritus will be talking on the phone live with MIT professor Max Tegmark, professor of physics, about a recent MIT survey on science and religion. That'll be March 17 here on Keeping the Faith. And the week following, March 24, Mary Ellen Lacey, who was one of the famous nuns on the bus, will be talking by phone with me about some of the issues that her very progressive Catholic network is lobbying in Washington, D.C. about. That'll be March 24th. And we'll have a program on Islam on March 31st. Those are some of the programs coming ahead on Keeping the Faith. Let's hear now just a quick bit of information about what you can hear on Focus tomorrow with Jim Meadows.
Monday on Focus, we'll look at ways that Islamic women are expressing themselves in today's world. Professor Miriam Cook of Duke University will tell us how Arab women are empowering themselves through writing. And blogger and Champaign native Maryam Sob talks about Muslim women who find fashion, as well as religious obedience, in their faith's tradition of hijab. I'm Jim Meadows. Join the conversation on Focus, Monday morning at 10 on WYLL AM 580.
And Jim Meadows is just in his second week after taking over the chair as the host of Focus, and wish him well as he starts off his second week with that very interesting program on women in Islam. But back now with our guest on Keeping the Faith, Leslie Leyland Fields. Leslie, in that very moving bit of writing you shared with us through the radio that you had been sharing that you had already shared in your blog with many people, I noticed it had quite a few comments when I last read it earlier this week, and it clearly touched a lot of people. What are some of the responses that you remember?
Yeah, I was just very, very humbled and grateful that there was such a response. And there's one in particular that just really, really pierced me. And it was from a man who is a retired minister, and he identified himself that way. And he wrote, and just in such a spirit of humility, you know, he said, he gave his age, you know, older man that used to pour out my heart to people about God's love. He said, I've retired from all the traveling and doing all of that. And he said, in the meantime, I've become more and more selfish and embittered at the world around me. And he said, reading this, it kind of, he said, my heart is moved by God's compassion and care and by your willingness to be a little less selfish. And so my heart goes out to that man. I know, I've tasted that a little bit of what it can be like to pour yourself out to a lot of people, and sometimes you don't always receive something back. So I think about him, and I'm grateful that if these words were able to encourage him a little bit.
Now, it's often hard when you clearly recognize this in the way you wrote that at peace, it's often hard to use yourself as a good example ever in writing about spirituality. Why did you risk that in this case? Why did you risk sharing what you did?
I'm not special. I'm like everyone else, I think. And when I have a certain feeling or fear or, you know, I figure that probably everybody else does too. And, you know, as I sat there watching before I finally, you know, stood up and moved over next to the woman, I had a lot of fears, and I was shaking, literally, with fear, to go and sit with her. And so I'm more than happy to confess my own failings and my own shortcomings, and when I stop seeing those in myself, I probably just should stop writing.
But in this case, you not only had those feelings, but instead of just sort of staying in your own airplane seat and thinking about the lecture you're going to give, you actually got up and did something. You did one of these acts of kindness. What do you think made a difference in this case that enabled you to do that?
You know, honestly, I think it was a prayer that I had prayed that morning, because as I'm sitting in the seat, that's the first thing that came to my mind immediately, was that I asked God to serve, you know, that I could serve someone in a special way today. I remembered that prayer, and I knew that this moment and this meeting between this beautiful woman and I was not an accident. I knew that somehow, in the very mysterious ways that Providence works, he had brought us together for that flight. And so that's what gave me the courage.
Now, in your case, you feel that it was a spiritual connection, and you give God credit for that. But there are all kinds of people who do random acts of kindness,
yeah,
often from very secular perspectives. Mm-hmm. So why do they do it?
I can't speak for them. But I think many of us do have a desire to serve. And I think that whether we speak God's name or not, that there is good in our hearts. And we also, I think another reason is, you know, the golden rule, I think is kind of planted in all of us, that we try to do for others what we know others would want to do for us. And, you know, that was a perfect example of knowing that what an awful thing it would have been for that woman to be alone for that whole flight. And if I were her, I know that I would want somebody to come and sit next to me, just someone to pour out, you know, this tragedy to. So I think people understand and respond to, you know, to what we call the golden rule.
You've referred your in this particular blog to Jesus as well as God, and you identify yourself very publicly as a Christian believer. What sort of a Christian are you? How do you describe yourself? What kind of I don't want to say what you've already said in your blog, but what would you say if someone asked, what kind of a Christian are you?
Oh, you know, and nobody, we don't want labels, any of us, you know. You know, and everything seems fraught with misunderstanding and misinterpretation. And so what would I say? I would say that I'm someone who loves God and really wants to love God more, and who is fed by the Bible. I see the Bible as God's word, and I find it to be a book that's alive and living and inspiring and motivating, rather than, I know many people experience it as something that's ancient and dead, but it feels very alive to me. So I'm someone who believes that Jesus is still alive also, and I'm trying to live in the truth of his words, and trying to live out and follow the kind of life that he himself practiced. So I guess I would say I am a follower of Jesus.
Now, one of the things, well, let me give the phone numbers again, because some of the things you said may entice some of our listeners to call. 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free number you could use anywhere the program is heard in the continental U.S. I'm sorry we can't take calls from Alaska on that number. I don't know why, but we're not allowed to do that, or Hawaii. But any of the other, the lower 48, so we can take toll-free calls. If listeners in the Champaign-Urbana area may punch in 217-333-9455. Let me ask a mean question, Leslie. I mean, you gave God credit for helping you have the courage to talk to this woman and even give you perhaps words to say that would be comforting to her, helpful to her at that time when she had just heard about her terminal diagnosis of cancer. But you also kind of blame God for her having cancer. You said in that blog, and I quote, "This wondrous, terrifying God we serve, who has asked one of his daughters to die a hard, early death, and who asked another selfish, frightened daughter to sit with her in her fear and aloneness for a short time." Do you really think God gave her cancer?
You're asking the big question.
Yeah, well, we ask big questions on this
you
show.
You do. Yeah, yes, you do. I think that God is, you know, just even the name God, I think speaks to sovereignty, to his sovereignty. And sovereignty is one of those words that can't be qualified or else the word is invalid. And so I believe that God is somehow involved in all things, in all events. I can't tell you how. I can't describe causality, the degree or the nature of causality. But I do know that I have many friends who might say instead that, you know, that maybe that Satan caused her cancer, or, you know, I would never, I don't ascribe things to Satan that way. I think God is over all. It doesn't mean that there are not other secondary means along the way. If somebody gets lung cancer, you know, maybe they smoked for 30 years. If somebody gets, you know, another disease, maybe they were exposed to environmental pollutants. I think there are causes of disease all around us, and that it's part of a world that has that is decaying and broken and wearing out. But God is not responsible for the wearing out of the world. I think we're the ones who are doing that. So it's a hard question to answer with a simple answer, Steve.
When you write about environmental issues, you're quite I'm not sure what's the best word to use, but you're quite explicit in saying that we humans are ruining a very beautiful world with our unconcern, with our lack of concern of after making a buck with what happens with some of the things. And you've seen close up recent oil disasters and oil spill disasters in the Bay of Alaska.
Yeah.
Oil drilling rigs that have been loose, and you've written about those and what might happen to them if they don't get recaptured.
Mm-hmm.
So you talk a lot about human freedom. Can you imagine that there's that same kind of freedom in the world of cancer cells, that it's not necessarily God doing it, but it's part of a free world in which free people live?
Yes, and I could say that, but I think that the next argument, you know, the next thing that people respond to that is by saying, you know, if God is sovereign, then he has the capacity to prevent, you know, prevent the cancer. And I can't deny that God does have the capacity to prevent those cancer cells from lodging and spreading and metastasizing. So, you know, I don't understand. I do not have a grasp on disease and tragedy and you know, the tsunami that killed hundreds of thousands of people, these horrible tragedies and war. I don't have an easy answer for it, Steve. I think it's part of the responsibility, though, of every one of us to wrestle with those questions and to look at human responsibility. You know, how much God is responsible for, I'm not sure, but I know what I'm responsible for, and that my focus is more on human responsibility, what we are responsible to do in terms of how we take care of this earth and how we take care of one another.
Let's talk about some of the environmental issues that you've raised in your very interesting blog called The People Can Find at LeslieLeylandFields.com, and Leslie is spelled L-E-S-L-I-E, Leyland, L-E-Y-L-A-N-D, Fields, F-I-E-L-D-S.com. You talk about oil spills and the recent, what was it, a derrick that was loose. You've seen the results on your shores.
Mm-hmm.
Do you live right on the coast of the island?
Oh, I do indeed, and And the other part is, you know, I live here in Kodiak during the winter, and in the summer I moved to, my family and I moved to another island on the other side of Kodiak called Harvester Island, and it's just our family that lives there, and we commercial fish there. So in both places I live literally, you know, on the water, over the water. So we're very, very connected to, you know, to the whole marine environment. And when we're commercial fishing, of course, we're not, you know, we're not just on shore. We're on the water, and we are, you know, pulling our living literally from the ocean. So we do have very deep feelings about the environment.
And what have you seen?
And we were, of course, the Exxon oil spill that happened back in 1989, our shores were fouled with that oil, and just big black lumps of it would come ashore, and they would be filled with you know, you'd see bits of birds in it, and you know, other living matter, and obviously, you know, it just suffocates everything that it comes in contact with. And we were shut down for that whole season, of course, and we spent the entire fishing season with shovels and rakes patrolling our beaches, because every day more would wash in, and we would shovel it into these special bags that had been provided, and once a week or so, you know, boats would come and would pick up all the stuff. And so that was very, very vivid. And
were you compensated financially for having lost that whole season of fishing?
It took many, many years, but we were eventually compensated.
By Exxon directly or through the U.S. government?
Through Exxon. Yeah.
How was that fee negotiated?
Through more than 20 years of litigation.
Wow.
And that's a whole other subject. But
going to write a book about it?
Yeah, I'm not going to write a book about it, but I could write a book about it. I do write about that summer in my memoir, Surviving the Island of Grace. There's a whole chapter.
And that's still available.
It is
at Amazon.
Yeah, it's on
and
Amazon,
other places.
And, mm-hmm, right. Yeah, and my I had just one child then, and she was a baby, so she was, you know, it's just very vivid that, you know, I've got my daughter, my baby, in a backpack while I am out every day, you know, cleaning the beaches. And, you know, our children always represent the future, you know, and here we are trying to clean up, you know, this horrific mess. We want our world to be better for our children, not worse.
Since you've mentioned your children in your blog, and just now, I'm not sure I've kept up. How many children have you? I think I do have six.
No, it's a fixed number.
Okay.
I have six. I have a daughter and then five sons.
And you said we are commercial fishermen. How many, who's included in that we?
So the we is my husband and every one of my children. They range in age from 24 down to 10, so they're all very, very involved in commercial fishing. And then my two brothers-in-law, and so it's an extended family operation. So everyone in my immediate family, they're all out on the water at all hours.
We're talking with Leslie Leyland Fields today about her spiritual writing on her blog. We have a caller on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Hello, Leslie. Since you're on the Kodiak Island, and there are five native groupings about you, are all of them of the same family grouping of the Aleuts, or other? And does that alter or somewhat affect what church going or doing that you might be doing?
That's a good question, and I'll ask you for a clarification on the second question. But yes, they are the indigenous people on Kodiak Island are called Aleutics.
Yep.
And each one of the five villages are mostly Aleutic people, you know, whose roots go back thousands and thousands of years.
Right. Are any of them Celtic?
Are you saying Celtic?
That's what I said.
No.
Okay, because the Celts went up to Mongolia and across over also.
Okay. Well, probably an anthropologist would be the one to answer that question.
And how does their presence or absence or introduction fit into what I assume that you possibly run Christian faith practices?
They are, this is a very interesting and wonderful part of Kodiak culture, is that many of the Aleutics are, historically, they are Russian Orthodox.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, because the Russians came over and colonized.
That's why I asked how it affects whatever groupings you affix yourself to.
Uh-huh. Well, I go to a community church, but just a stone's throw from my church down the hill is a Russian Orthodox church. And of course, you know, those are the ones with the beautiful onion tops and that beautiful blue color. So that's just a stone's throw.
But you don't have any more dwarf bishops or clergy. Russian Orthodox clergy used to be midgets.
Actually, we do. There's a very vibrant community here.
And the last I had seen that was in Chicago about 40-odd years ago.
We have a seminary also. We have St. Herman Seminary, so a Russian Orthodox seminary.
On your island?
Yes, on Kodiak Island.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it interesting what questions rise?
That's why I'm always eager to have listeners call.
Yeah. Excellent questions. And so people from Native villages all over Alaska who are themselves Russian Orthodox will come to the seminary here on Kodiak Island, and they will study and learn and become readers in the church or become priests and then go back to their villages to serve in their community. So we have another.
Do any of the people run with the animist religions? And there's several of them.
Animist?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I don't believe so. Not on Kodiak Island.
Okay. That's the question.
Well, thank you very much for the call.
Yeah,
we appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
We're about 20 minutes before the end of Keeping the Faith today with our guest Leslie Leyland Fields, author of The Spirit of Food, most recently. And you said the title of your earlier book, which I've not read, about grace. What's that?
Yeah, that's my memoir. Actually, I have 8 books out, and my memoir is called Surviving the Island of Grace. And it's about my life out on our fish camp island. So my life out in the wilderness and commercial fishing, and what that's looked like over the last 30 years.
Aren't you too young to write a memoir?
No, I'm not. You know, I teach as well. And
at Seattle. Uh-huh.
I taught in Seattle Pacific University in their Master of Fine Arts program, but I also do writers in residence. And so I teach college students about writing memoir. And I think we get memoir and autobiography sometimes mixed up. And
so you can write a memoir at any stage along the way.
You certainly can. Okay. You certainly can. Yes, even children in elementary school can write. Because, frankly, a memoir is what happened yesterday. Right, a memoir is something that happened in the past, and most of our lives has happened behind us.
Let me say again, we're talking with Leslie Leyland Fields on Keeping the Faith. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host. Next week we'll be hearing an archive program with Professor Danny Otto talking about changes in Illinois Amish life. Professor Otto's from Eastern Illinois University and grew up in an Amish family. He's now Mennonite. On March 17, Professor Don Dolan will be our guest host. He's a frequent guest host, and we heard him, in fact, just last week. He'll be having a live show next March 17, talking with Professor Max Tegmark from MIT, a physics professor there, on a recent survey MIT did on science and religion. That'll be next 2 weeks from today. On March 24, Sister Mary Ellen Lacey will be our guest by phone from Brooklyn, or maybe Washington, D.C. She's not exactly clear where she's going to be. She is a lobbyist with a very progressive Catholic network of sisters. She's one of the nuns on the bus of the last election fame, and we'll be talking with her about some of the issues they raise. A program on Islam will come up March 31st here in 2013. The University YMCA has been a longtime supporter of Keeping the Faith program here on WILL AM 580. And their next program of Friday Forums will be March 8, this coming Friday at noon. And the Reverend Dr. Cindy Love, who's the Executive Director of Soul Force, will be speaking here at the University of Illinois. Soul Force is dedicated to the relentless but nonviolent resistance to oppression arising out of fundamentalism. That's March 8 at the University Y at the University of Illinois campus on the corner of Wright Street and Chalmers. You can get a lunch there by calling 337-1500 in advance or simply showing up and ordering one when you get there, or you may take your own bag lunch or simply go to the free lecture. On March 29 at the Y, the Reverend Dr. Eugene Barnes, founder and executive director of the Metanoia Centers, will be talking on working for economic justice and community transformation from a faith base. Two programs coming up at the University Y, and between last week going on for, how many, through April 7th, there's a wonderful art exhibit at the University Y called Garden of Verses, where quotations from the Quran are on some very interesting paintings from an artist in California. She's shipped her work here to the Y so people in the Midwest can enjoy it. Her name is Salma Arastu, A-R-A-S-T-U. It can be seen anytime the Y is open, which is most days and most nights. Well, getting back to our guest, Leslie Leyland Fields. Leslie, is there another perhaps portion of a recent blog that you might want to read from? You read from that very moving one that we had time for you to read the whole thing, but I think now we're down to our last 8 minutes or so. Could you read for maybe a couple minutes from another one of your recent very moving pieces dealing with spiritual issues?
Sure. This will be the last half of a blog that says Breaking the Sound Barrier. This was when, I've forgotten his name, but when he broke the sound barrier. Twilight Zone and Why You're More Daring Than You Think. The last 2 months, it has rained and fogged almost continually in Kodiak, following a summer of the same. I flew to Georgia to teach a class at Covenant College this last week with great anticipation of deliverance. The sun, the warmth. Instead, rain and fog every day there but one. I habitually look up at the sky, mostly with resignation and endurance, which is its own kind of courage. But not everybody does. Some people string a line between their fear and their comfort and walk it. Some swim between continents. Some dive into the deepest ocean trenches. It is astounding. As I watch these feats, I hear the psalmist David's words in my ears. What is man that you remember him? The son of man that you look after him? You made him little less than God and crowned him with glory and honor. You made him Lord over the works of your hands. You put everything under his feet, all the sheep and oxen, as well as the animals in the wild, the birds of the sky and the fish of the sea that pass through the currents of the seas. How marvelous! God, who is beyond great, has yet turned his attention to spindly little human us to crown us with glory and honor. We are remembered and looked after by the God of all things. We are charged to take charge of the world, to tend and love it. Because of all this, women and men dare to leap and fly and swim and run and dive within all the elements and places of the world. And what of the rest of us, pedestrian us, who live mostly with feet on the ground we are made from? We are daring too. We break barriers every day, we people of dirt, water, fog, and air. Some days I break the dirt barrier. I sweep the floor. Some days I break the water barrier. I go running in the sideways rain. Some days I try to break the sleep barrier. I stay up half the night writing. Some days I break the aesthetic barrier. I wear my bunny boots with my leopard spotted raincoat. Some days I break the sound barrier. I turn off the radio and listen to the ocean. Some days I break the ignorance barrier and I read a book. Some days I break the fog barrier. My plane improbably makes it in. Some days I break the distance barrier and send words out to friends in disparate places. And you, what barriers are you breaking today? Truly, what a marvel we are.
A reading by the author, Leslie Leyland Fields, from one of her recent blogs that can be found at leslielaylandfields.com. Leslie, you give lectures, you give workshops, you travel around and speak at colleges and universities. What do people mainly ask you to talk about?
You know, I speak on a wide variety of topics because of my books. Address a variety of topics. I've just come back from giving lectures on and speaking about food, again, the spirituality of food. I gave a lecture in Virginia to a university about the culture wars, and the title was Giving Up on Changing the World, A Better Way to Win the Culture Wars. I speak about writing. I speak about matters of theology and parenting. One of my books is on myths of parenting. We have a lot of those, but it's specifically on nine what I think are the most dangerous myths of parenting. So I'm really happy that I get to address a lot of topics, and because I'm interested in so many things, so I'm thankful that I've been given this freedom to really use my mind and my heart in this way.
One of the gifts of your blog that I've appreciated is your photography. Are you the photographer, or is that someone else in your extended family you were talking about?
No, that's mostly me.
And, of course, you have the advantage of that beautiful setting there in Alaska.
I really do. I do not want to claim that I'm a great photographer. I have a really good camera, and I have a really beautiful environment. So I'm gonna give the credit there.
You also are not afraid to put pictures of your children on your blog. Did that make you nervous at first?
No.
Feel pretty safe out on that island.
I do. my kids are tough, too, so that's the other part.
Now, I had two people at separate occasions when they asked me, who's going to be your guest this week? And I said, well, a very interesting woman from Alaska. And they both said, Sarah Palin? How do you distinguish yourself from from your other famous resident.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of those names that people often have a very strong response to, one way or the other. And I do distinguish myself. We actually have a number of things in common. We both have large families, and we both travel around and speak. But I'd like to think that I maybe approach debate and dialogue and conversation in a little more open fashion. And my politics aren't necessarily the same as hers, so I would make a distinction.
What do your children think of your various interests and passions, writing and lecturing and traveling and in the environment and fishing?
They just think it's normal. It's just everyday life. They have no sense that this is any different from anybody else.
And let's talk a little bit about your spouse. He's a commercial fisherman. You met in college, you said. Does he appreciate good writing?
Yeah, he does. He is a huge reader, and I think he probably reads more than I do. He certainly reads more books than I do. I do a lot of reading online and do lots of research and everything. But he's a really wonderful reader. He's actually a pretty good writer, too, but not a creative writer. He is involved in fisheries politics as well as commercial fishing. So he's very involved at the highest levels of policy making for the fisheries in Alaska and even down to Washington and Oregon. So fishing and all things related to the ocean, he is a veritable encyclopedia. And whenever I want to know something, I can just go right to him. So, it helps me sort of keep track too of what's happening in the fisheries around the state.
Well, we are out of time, but I want to thank you, Leslie Leland Fields, for sharing your thoughts with us today, your writing, and your blog.
Well, thank you, Steve. Thank you for having me on, and I love your show, and I'm honored to have spent this time with you.
You're welcome. Leslie Leland Fields can be found at thatname.com and connections to her blog. She is the author of The Spirit of Food and Surviving the Island of Grace, a memoir and other books on parenting and other topics. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith. I remind you that at the Y, coming up at noon, on Friday, February 8th, 2013. It's March 8th from Soul Force, Dr. Cindy Love. And on March 29th, there's a break for spring break, Dr. Eugene Barnes, founder and director of Metanoia Center that works on issues of economic justice. Coming up next week here on Keeping the Faith will be an archive program from last September on changes in Illinois Amish life, an interview with Professor Danny Otto from Charleston, Eastern Illinois University. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
I'm Diane Nolan, host of WILL-TV's Mid-American Gardener. This summer, you can join me on a unique journey to England to discover some of the country's most famous gardens. On the 9-day tour, we'll explore Castle Howard, Hidcote Manor, the Cotswolds Villages, Sissinghurst Gardens, the Hampton Court Flower Show, and much more. For more information, call 217-333-7300.
This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM.